It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, not everybody feels welcomed by the game of golf, but a Wisconsin group is looking to change things. We'll meet two of the leaders of the Vibes Golf Club. First, it's always fun to welcome fresh new faces to your workplace. We've had several new producers join us on the Ideas Network in the last few months. And just last month, Wisconsin Public Radio's new director had her first day on the job. She comes to us with a long public radio resume, 25 years in media. She spent time next door at Minnesota Public Radio and New Hampshire Public Radio. Most recently was Senior Vice President for Content at Vermont Public. Sarah Ashworth is the new director of WPR. Sarah, welcome to Wisconsin.
Thank you. Thank you for the warm welcome. It's great to be here.
You're not a stranger to the Midwest. How are you settling into Wisconsin?
Oh, good. Good. Yes, I grew up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And so I've often, I have loved Wisconsin and traveling through the state often. And we are settling in. We're living near Madison, outside of Madison and Middleton. And I have a daughter and a husband who came with me. And we have had the warmest welcome. The very warmest, you know, gift baskets here from staff of wonderful like Wisconsin honey, Wisconsin chocolates, a quilted Wisconsin pillow, just the warmest welcome from our neighbors as well. And I've just felt so happy to be here in Wisconsin and start to settle in and meet people.
And we're taking this opportunity to let you meet the listeners of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kind of introduce yourself. Can you tell us some about your background in public radio?
Sure. Well, I was somebody who did not grow up listening to a lot of public radio, even in a state with Garrison Keillor, a state where Minnesota Public Radio was firmly established in Minnesota. But we listened to WCCO 830 commercial radio often. We watched 60 Minutes. I grew up with a real interest in rigorous journalism, and that's what I wanted to do. So the way I found public radio was through journalism school. I went to school in Missouri, and I was first interested in television journalism, and a news director there recommended I maybe try the public radio station, the kind of journalism I was looking to do, the kind of colleagues I was really, just the mission-driven spirit of many of the people I've met who work in public radio. I found that station. I started reporting there. I became the news director there. I taught some students journalism while I was there, and I thought this is where I'd like to be. And so from there, I've worked at five different public radio stations, mainly in roles that that started out very connected to news and local news in communities. And I've worked as an editor, as a reporter, as a producer. I worked in D.C. for a little while on the Diane Rehm Show, which was a call-in program. I love talk show programming, and have been a producer in a few different talk programs and love the interaction and spontaneity of live radio that happens here every day. And then I moved sort of into an overall role in content, as you said, in Vermont. And from there, have gotten more interested in larger leadership roles in public media to really just further the mission of public media.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people recommended I do radio and not TV. Never knew what to make of that.
Did you ever ask why?
No, I didn't want to know the answer. Now, what led you to want to come here to Wisconsin and this gig, which is a pretty big thing? We got a lot going on here around
the
state.
You know, when I look at the history, you know, and I know you celebrated over 100 years a few years ago, it is such a marker in the public media system and industry, and the reputation and legacy of Wisconsin Public Radio I've known about, and the deep commitment to local communities and local service here is something I just believe deeply in and am excited to be a part of. So that was the big draw. Also, as we talked about, I consider the Midwest home, and it's really nice to be back closer in home. And I took part in a program last year that was called the Public Media Women in Leadership. And it was something that I also started thinking about, what kind of role, what do I want to do in public media? I've done a lot with local news. I'm really on the ground as a reporter, producer, editor. What more would I like to do? And I've thought about a larger role in leading an organization and being part of public media. And so that's how I ended up here. And I'm so happy to be here.
Talking to Sarah Ashworth, the brand new director of Wisconsin Public Radio. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, what you're seeing now that you're here at Wisconsin Public Radio. First of all, on the upside, what do you think WPR does really well? And you don't have to say me. You can say me.
I'll check that off my list. You were top of the list. No, I'm very, we do local programming, local programming, really, really well here. That I see and I hear from listeners. So just taking our dog for a walk, I've met people who support and listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and they just talk about the people here, the trust that they have in the news, the just how much they appreciate the music that we have as part of our service as well. And the other day I sat in the studio with Stephanie Elkins, and the storytelling she brings to just introducing a piece of music is so unique and so grounded in life here in Wisconsin. And I just think that that really very local feeling of here is so important and something that Wisconsin Public Radio does really, really well. The high quality journalism also, the series that's going on this week, How We Got Here, looking at abortion in Wisconsin since 1849. I've been so impressed by the context and the individual stories woven into the history of the state, and have found it so helpful and illuminating in understanding sort of where we are in the state today. So that journalism, that local news, also the technology and engineering that happens here. I don't know if listeners know, I did not know before starting, that we were able, you were able to host remotely. People are able to work remotely. That was not happening. So when COVID hit, when the pandemic started, a lot of stations were scrambling. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin Public Radio had the technology in place to work remotely and to have hosts work remotely, to have board operators remote. It's amazing to me. So I think that we are leaders in the industry, too, in our engineering and technology.
Now, every media outlet knows this. We see a different world now. Everybody has a lot of different options for how they can get news and entertainment,
that's the challenge.
Not just radio and TV, but all the online stuff and podcasts. What kind of things, and I know you're just a few weeks in here, what kind of things are you looking at when it comes to how we, you know, keep broadcasting, of course, but reach people in those other ways?
We are in a time right now where most of our audience continues to listen to us over the air broadcast. And that is so important because that provides universal access. It shouldn't matter what you can afford, what you can access, where you are in life, where you live in the state. If you can have access to high quality, trusted information and really highly curated music and sources of programming that bring a richness to your life and connect you with the state, that I believe should be universally available. And that broadcast service does that and is so important. But we also know younger people are not buying radios. It's hard to buy a radio in some ways in the store today. So we have to be thinking about how we can reach people on platforms where they are and begin to have more of our work show up prominently in digital spaces where people already are. So we are in a time where we are balancing both, and those numbers will start to change more and more as we have more and more people figure out how to listen to us, to interact with us on digital platforms. So we're in a really distinct period of doing both. To me, that's the big challenge and something I want to be part of helping figure out here at WPR.
And I understand you're getting ready to kick off a tour of bureaus around the state.
Yes,
And you just came from a national conference where a focus was on looking at localism, listening to communities. Can you talk about how important that's going to be for our next couple of few years here at WPR?
I think it is so, so important as we see sort of media companies consolidate and local newspapers no longer be owned locally. You know, we are a place here. The people who are part of WPR, we live and work in your communities. We're here. And that is so important in helping give voice to communities all over the state and connect people across the state. And that's what I think being, you know, that localism means. And that was very much the theme at this conference with a lot of different public media leaders talking about how to have impact in your community and to listen to people in your community and change that relationship. I think for years, you know, we've been a service. We have provided programming. How can we work more with people in communities, listen to people in communities, and create something together? I think that's the next thing to really figure out as a public media station.
Sarah, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Sarah Ashworth, new director of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talk to her about what she brings to the position and the organization and why she's excited about being here in Wisconsin. Coming up, former Wisconsin Badgers athletes are trying to make the sport of golf more approachable for underrepresented and minority communities. We'll meet the Vibes Golf Club. That's up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The game of golf can feel unapproachable for people of different backgrounds or cultures. The stereotype of the sport, anyway, is that it's dominated by affluent white men who historically haven't always been welcoming to prospective players that don't fit the country club lifestyle. The famous Masters Golf Tournament at Augusta National, for example, didn't invite its first black competitor until 1975, didn't allow its first black member until 1990, didn't offer membership to women until 2012. A Wisconsin project, including former UW-Madison football players, is trying to expand the game of golf and make it more friendly and accessible for everybody, regardless of their upbringing. Noe Vital is CEO and co-founder of Vibes Golf Club, an amateur golf club he started with 9 former Wisconsin Badgers football players. Noe, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And Dari Ogunbowale is a co-founder and director of brand and merchandising for Vibes Golf Club, former Wisconsin Badgers running back who now plays for the Houston Texans, joining us from preseason sidelight, I understand. Dari, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Noe, can you talk about the origins of Vibes Golf Club?
Yeah, Vibes Golf Club. We launched about 2 years ago in July of 2021. We started putting in the groundwork a little earlier in 2021. The focus for us was really how can we, you know, make this game of golf, a game that we all love and enjoy playing, just more approachable for us, right? Because as a team, some of us weren't even exposed to golf until way like further down, you know, in our lives. Like for me, I didn't pick up a club until I was like 21 years old. And that story rings true for the, you know, most of the guys on our team. And when I moved out to San Diego, post-graduating from the University of Wisconsin, I always joked and said I had to pick up a hobby. I was either going to golf or I was going to surf. And I didn't trust the ocean. I don't trust the water. So I picked up a golf club, and that's when I really started getting hooked into the game. But it didn't take long for me to look around and realize that there isn't a lot of people like me or people that have had similar upbringings like me. And, you know, with the Vibes team, right, all 10 of us, we've all been friends since college. We all, you know, joked that a decade ago we were roaming campus together. And we've kind of stuck together since then. And so I had an idea of like, hey, guys, like we have a really unique opportunity in this game that, you know, we're starting to dabble in to really, you know, make it more approachable for people like us, people that look like us, talk like us, and, you know, quite frankly, just vibe like us.
Dari, you were a four sport athlete in high school. You played, of course, for the Badgers. You're now in pro football. What got you into golf and the Vibes Golf Club?
To be honest, I really didn't get into golf until college, like Noe. We had a walk-on in the running back room who golfed a lot in his school time. And I went out with him a couple times, and it was fun. You know, it was fun. We were competing. We were gambling every now and then. You know, it was just something that we could do together away from football. But like Noe said, I mean, I played a lot of sports growing up. My parents made sure I was really exposed for being an athlete, but golf just wasn't even a thought, you know, and that was kind of what I was so excited when I approached this about starting Vibes Golf Club.
And Noe, can you talk about the kinds of things you're doing now to bridge the gap, to bring people into golf maybe earlier than you and Dari got into it?
So our whole approach has been just to be authentic, right? When you kind of dig into the lack of diversity in golf, a lot of times the solution is really focused on access, right? Everyone wants to provide access, and there's great organizations out there that do that. But our stance is, you can provide all the access in the world, but if you're not generating demand or growing interest, you're never really going to bring new people in. So our whole focus has been knowing the things that we're interested in, knowing the things that we like and appreciate in everyday life, right? And all the other hobbies that we get into. How can we do that with golf? So for us, it's, you know, through our social media. If you look at our content, it's very specific. It very much feels like it's something that someone who didn't golf but still likes similar interests that we're in, they're seeing, and it feels like it's something they should like. And then other things like our events, right? We host tournaments. We've now hosted 4 tournaments. We just did our most recent one back home in Wisconsin. And then we do other events with like first tee chapters across the country or other organizations like that, where we come to like host some type of golf event with just kids in the area that are like from, you know, similar situations as ours as kids. And then they'll come up to us and be like, wait, you guys golf? Like you really like golf? You're into it? And I'm like, of course we are. And then but then they see how we play it, right? We're out there just being ourselves. And it's just kind of like a motto for us, right? It's, you know, how can we get someone to walk on a golf course as themselves and walk off of it as themselves as well, right? They don't have to feel they've got to act a certain way or be different. They're just going out there playing, enjoying it just like they would any other sport.
And Dari, could you talk about working on some of the programs? Oop, you know what? I think we've got the national anthem going on in the background for Dari at the stadium. Let's stick with you for a moment, Noe, till they get through that. What, Noe, has been the reaction when you go to golf courses and say, hey, yeah, we want to do these programs. We want to bring on these kids. Are they open to these ideas?
Some are and some aren't. But the ones that aren't at first, it's a little confusing to them, right? And you know, and I understand it from their vantage point because they're not used to seeing a group like ours, right? And when they, you know, we always kind of say we're like that proof of concept. We go out there and they look at us and, you know, they're a little, you know, what are these guys doing? Are they taking it serious or not? But when they see us out there competing and respecting the rules of the game, right? And actually enjoying the game for what it is, but with our own style, they realize like, oh, that they really are just golfing. That's awesome. And then from there, right, we kind of broke down that first barrier. Like we're the first one to break down that barrier. And then now we've created kind of that pathway for people to follow behind us, right? And so, you know, I think for me, the reaction that I've had is at first I thought we were going to get a lot of pushback when we started to do this. But honestly, it was like within 6 months, I was on a call with the PGA Tour talking about how there's ways that we could work together. And to me, that was the most shocking. I thought there was going to be resistance, but instead people know that something like this needed to happen. And there's this change that needs to happen in the game. And they just needed someone to kind of help pilot that. And I can't sit here and say we're the only group that's doing this, but we're for sure one of the ones that are really pushing a lot of effort and trying to bring these other groups that are like-minded so that we can actually go truly change this game.
We're talking about Vibes Golf Club, an effort to get people from different communities into the game of golf at an early age. Noe Vital is with us, co-founder and CEO of the group, and Dari Ogunmowale, UW-Madison Badger football alum and also on the team for this group. All right, I think I counted off enough time for that national anthem. Dari, do we still have you with us?
Yep, I'm still here. They all finished up now.
So can you talk about what does it mean for you to get out with, you know, the next generation of golfers, kids who might never have thought about picking up a golf club?
It's huge for me, man, just because, like I said, sports has just meant so much in my life, obviously still being able to play sports. But growing up, I mean, I didn't even see golf as a sport, golf as an avenue for me to kind of experience competition, experience things that I get to experience now. And it's fun. It's a fun sport and it's a great sport to learn. You know, it's a great environment to be in. So it means a lot for me to be able to kind of expose kids to something that I had no chance of doing when I was a young kid growing up in Milwaukee.
And Dari, I got to ask, you've been successful in different sports, as I mentioned. How are you as a golfer?
I'm working on it. Right now my driving game is probably my weakest point. But that's what I'm trying to get better at. Right now, since I'm in season, I like to use that as excuse that I'm gonna fall behind the rest of the guys on the team. But come off season, I'll pick it back up.
And Noe, if there are people out there listening who are, you know, involved, they run a golf course or affiliated with one or are golfers themselves, are there ways they can help get involved, again, bringing this new generation of golfers on board from different communities?
Honestly, it's just, you know, finding ways to do outreach, right? I think that's one of the big pieces. And just to think and put themselves in the shoes of these individuals, right? I think golf has a lot of anxieties that people don't really consider. But I mean, we know, like I know going into a golf course that the chance of me running into someone like myself is very rare, right? So there's always like this anxious like feeling from parking lot to, you know, to the clubhouse. And if there's ways where these golf courses can just kind of create like that environment where it's like anyone could come play, right? Or even have like open sessions where people could come pick up and just practice putting, practice chipping, right? Because it's getting the club in someone's hand for the first time. So it's like these outreach events just to focus, you know, to get them out there and just to let people know, like, hey, we want you guys to come play too. I think for me, I, unlike other sports, golf was just never really an option, right? And I think if golf courses or others that have, you know, that level of influence to attract people to a golf course, I encourage them to do so, because there's a lot of people that want to try it, but they're afraid to raise their hand.
And Dari, if there is a younger version of Dari Ogunbowale out there listening right now, what would you say to them to encourage them to maybe check out golf, even if they'd never thought about it before?
I'd say go and do it, man. Go and do it. There's a lot of different perks to being a golfer as you get older. A lot of people that you get to meet that you, yeah, I guess you wouldn't really have the chance to meet, just because, like Noe said, it's just a, it's a great resource to have. And also, I mean, the younger daughter, I love accessorizing, and golf is one of those those ways that you can kind of look cool on the course. You know, have your own personality. So I know younger daughter would love to hear that too.
Noe, just in our last few moments, what are your hopes for the future of Vibes Golf Club?
To just keep it growing, right? To keep growing the to keep making an impact in different communities across the country. We've now done events in Wisconsin, Colorado, Ohio. We're just continuing to expand our reach. And for us, what we hope to do the next 2 years is really kind of change the culture of golf in a positive way, or help influence it, right? Like I said, there's others out there that are doing it. So for us to be able to work with these other organizations just to get more people like out there, like us out there on the course, that we, that's what we want to do. So, you know, we're on the right path right now. We're year two down. We're starting year three, and we have a lot of plans coming here up in the near future. So we're looking forward to it.
We'll leave it there. Noe, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
And Dari, thanks for being with us, and have a great game tonight.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
That's Dari Ogunbowale, co-founder and director of brand and merchandising for Vibes Golf Club, and former UW Badger running back who now plays for the Houston Texans. And Noe Vital is co-founder and CEO of Vibes Golf Club, also a UW-Madison graduate. They joined us for a look at their amateur golf club and their work to make the sport more approachable for people from diverse backgrounds. Coming up after the news, a group of faith leaders in Milwaukee has launched a campaign speaking out against a political ideology they see as a threat to democracy, Christian nationalism. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the world recently lost another musical legend with the passing of Irish singer-songwriter Sinead O'Connor. We'll talk about her music and her activism and why she didn't see the two as separate. Now, an interfaith group in Milwaukee has launched a new campaign called We All Belong. They say their primary goals are to protect democracy, build community, and reject what they see as a rising tide of Christian nationalism. The campaign defines Christian nationalism as, quote, a political ideology that merges Christian and American identities. According to the group, which includes a number of Christian faith leaders and others, Christian nationalism is not in keeping with the foundational teachings of the Christian faith, such as rejecting wealth and power or caring for the poor and marginalized. Two of those Christian faith leaders join us now to talk about why they believe opposing Christian nationalism is so important and urgent. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think is the role of faith in civic life? What would you like to see from local religious leaders? Do you have concerns, as our guests do, about what appears to be a rise in Christian nationalism? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Pastor Richard D. Shaw is president of Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, known as MICA, and pastor at St. Matthew Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. Pastor Shaw, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Also with us, Bishop Paul Erickson, bishop of the Greater Milwaukee Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Bishop Erickson, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Pastor Shaw, can you talk about what led you and the members of MICA to take up Christian nationalism as a major issue right now?
Yes. Thank you again for having us. We look across our country and observe things that are going on, and we see this rise in Christian nationalism and the danger that it imposes on the lives of people who do not fit under that umbrella. And MICA is an interfaith organization, so we are a community of our own. And so when we witness these things that are happening in our country, it just behooved us to get involved with this. And we understand the threat of Christian nationalism and the danger that it not only brings to our democracy, but also to people as a whole.
And Bishop Erickson, could you talk about your involvement with MICA and with this effort against Christian nationalism?
Yeah, thank you so much. I've been involved with MICA in various capacities over the years. And as we saw the rise in hate crimes and violence against non-Christian groups, our Jewish and Muslim and Sikh siblings, the kind of anti-immigrant rhetoric that was on the rise, both locally and across the country, it seemed to me that we needed to stand up and stand together and say very clearly that this is a country built on diversity of opinions and belief and faiths, that we can all work together to make this world a place in which, indeed, we all belong.
And Pastor Shaw, can you talk about the membership of MICA and the We All Belong effort? You're both leaders in Christian denominations. Can you talk about the mix in this group?
Yes. Again, we're interfaith. We have congregations from Muslim congregations, Jewish congregations. We have Buddhists. We have across the board. So we really do aim to build this community where, although we may have some differences in our traditions, but we find this common place that we meet, and it's around justice and standing up for those things that threaten our democracy and people, and those things that go against the very fabric of America. When we talk about freedom of religion, we live that out through MICA in terms of creating a community where we respect one another and our different beliefs.
Bishop Erickson, I know that within congregations, it isn't always a popular decision for faith leaders to get involved in politics one way or another. What kind of response have you gotten from your congregation with your involvement in this effort?
Well, as I've received nothing but supportive comments in the recent weeks, especially since the press conference that we held to kick this off last week, Thursday. And I think it's important to recognize that even though we strongly encourage people of all faiths and of no faith to engage in the civic arena, to engage in politics, we certainly need to avoid being partisan in that regard, yes. Favoring one side over the other or one politician over the other. But certainly Christians need to engage and use our voices to influence the way our world is shaped, to create the beloved community in which all people have what they need to live a full and dignified life.
We're talking to Bishop Paul Erickson with the Greater Milwaukee Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and Pastor Richard D. Shaw with the St. Matthew Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. They're both part of the group MICA and the campaign We All Belong, raising concerns about Christian nationalism in the United States. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions for our guests at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Pastor Shaw, getting into specific concerns about the ideas of Christian nationalism, as I understand it, you and your fellow Christian members of this group are concerned that there's a misuse, I guess, of the Christian name, of the Christian identity going on here. What are your concerns?
Yes. The first concern is that when you misrepresent something, it can be very dangerous. It also can lead people into being involved in something that they may not necessarily realize that they're involved in. What I mean by that is when you take an ideology and you wrap it in a faith's name, such as Christianity, some may only hear the word Christian and begin to take part of it, not realizing the agenda that is attached to that. Oftentimes say that it's an agenda that is wrapped up in Christian language that is very dangerous and alarming. And so one of the things that MICA strives to do is to bring this awareness to our congregation. And when I say congregations, not just Christian congregations, but congregations across the board, to bring this awareness, to be able to recognize it and then see how we can come together to combat this.
I want to give, this reminds me of something, I want to give a listen to a Southern Baptist, longtime Southern Baptist leader, Russell Moore, recently removed as a leader within the Southern Baptist Convention. He was speaking in an interview with NPR's All Things Considered earlier this week about why he's concerned about the direction of his faith community.
Well, it was the result of having multiple pastors tell me essentially the same story about quoting the Sermon on the Mount, parenthetically, in their preaching. Turn the other cheek. To have someone come up after and say, where did you get those liberal talking points? And what was alarming to me is that in most of these scenarios, when the pastor would say, I'm literally quoting Jesus Christ, the response would not be, I apologize. The response would be, yes, but that doesn't work anymore. That's weak. And when we get to the point where the teachings of Jesus himself are seen as subversive to us, then we're in a crisis.
I wanted to get your reactions to that. Bishop Erickson, first of all, what do you think hearing that anecdote related?
Well, that resonates with my own experience hearing pastors who had to preach on the, who were invited to preach on the Beatitudes because it came up in the assigned series of readings shortly after the inauguration of our previous president. And they were accused of going down a liberal path. So that does definitely resonate with our experience in our congregations. And I think we really need to remember that the scripture focuses on love of neighbor and that there are many different ways to love our neighbor, but we have to be involved in the civic arena and involved in caring for the least, the lost, and those people who are cast out.
And Pastor Shaw, your thoughts of what we heard from Russell Moore there?
Yes, we've experienced that within our denomination as well. A predominantly Black organization, but oftentimes what you hear is the language of I'll say evangelical thoughts and ideas that comes forth. And so, yes, those conversations take place within our denomination, especially when you are dealing with topics that are very sensitive politically, such as abortion and same-sex marriage. And so when you begin to bring the Bible in and condemn people because of how you interpret scripture, that leads to more division.
We're talking to Pastor Richard D. Shaw and Bishop Paul Erickson from the group Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope about their newly launched campaign against Christian nationalism. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you belong to a religious community? How are issues of politics dealt with within your congregation? Are they dealt with within your congregation? Do you want to see faith leaders get involved in advocating on issues? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Bishop Paul Erickson and Pastor Richard D. Shaw from the group Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope about their campaign to oppose Christian nationalism. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Does your faith affect your politics, how you vote, how you get involved maybe in advocating for or against things? Do you want to see faith leaders take stances on these issues? Are you concerned about Christian nationalism? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Chris is with us in Black River Falls. Chris, hi.
Hi. While listening to the conversation here, and I can sympathize with the guest's point of view, I am glad to see everybody in my community to be the best person in that part of that community that they can possibly be. But on the other hand, I am diametrically opposed to the injection of one's faith into politics in any form. I feel that we must use kind of a logic and reason-based approach to politics, and one's religion is their own personal beliefs. They're welcome to it. But as a community, we must make the best informed decision that we can, not based in fact, not on faith.
Chris. Chris. Thanks for the call. Based on fact, not in faith, Pastor Shaw, what do you think of what Chris had to say?
You know, I think it's almost impossible, and this is just my view, to separate our faith from any decisions that we make in life. Although we know that we don't want our faith to control others, but how we respond. And so when we're looking at Christian nationalism, again, and I use this word dangerous because it is because if you have a certain group who's interpreting scripture in a way that is oppressive and it's a way that in a way that is exclusive, you have to have that conversation along those lines. So if one is using their version of Christianity for a political movement, and the church is not just the church, but congregations, the faith community is real, then we also have to pull from our belief systems, not trying to control government, but at least sending the message that we should make our decisions in a caring and compassionate way.
Thanks for that call, Chris. Bishop Erickson, that reminds me, one of the themes in the We All Belong campaign is breaking the silence. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think we sometimes interpret the fact that my faith is my personal belief is that I should remain silent in the public arena. I do believe that my faith impacts every single thing I do, so I cannot engage in the public arena without bringing my faith. I cannot, however, impose my faith on others. And so as I engage in those conversations, I need to speak my truth, but then I need to listen to the other truths. So our congregations, I think, are too often afraid to talk about potentially controversial topics, and they just want to push those aside and sweep them under the rug and let's just sing happy songs and not go down any controversial road. I think we need to have these robust conversations in our congregations and in our communities so that we can listen to and learn from each other.
Let's go to another caller now. Garrett is with us in Wausau. Garrett, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I've talked to many other Christians who are kind of saddened by the what seems to be the co-opting of their religion with politics. And so I'm wondering how you separate the use of religion within politics, or perhaps the co-opting of religious beliefs within politics, with Christian nationalism specifically. Thank you.
Garrett, thanks for the call. Pastor Shaw, I think, Garrett, wondering, you know, how could you be involved? How could you bring your Christianity into politics without crossing the line into what you see happening in Christian nationalism?
Well, it's more so for me living it out. You live it out, and the message is sent through how we respond to situations in life, how we look at society. And again, it's about creating a beloved community. It's not about imposing, as Bishop Erickson said, it's not about controlling, but it is about sending a message that we can coexist, that we can live together, and we can bring our faith into this. And as a matter of fact, I want to be clear that there are those that side with us. They may not necessarily be a part of Michael, which they're welcome in terms of taking a stance with us, who are atheists. It's all about addressing an issue that uses Christianity to push a political agenda to control society. So, and that's where the religious community has to step up to speak against this.
Thanks again for that call. Bishop Erickson, one of the concerns raised in the press conference we mentioned earlier is that you see Christian nationalism potentially as a threat to democracy, to our representative form of government in the United States. Can you connect the dots for us?
I'll do my best. I think there is a fear that when one tries to communicate that in order to be a good American, you have to be Christian, and that Americans should be led by Christians only, that's a dangerous path to go down. And that is contrary to our understanding of a healthy democracy in which people of all faiths and no faiths engage together in the public arena, sharing their views and working together. My view in public engagement is shaped by the book of Micah, chapter 6, verse 8. We are called to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with our God. We have forgotten that third one so often. We are too many folks are lack humility in the public arena.
We are talking to Bishop Paul Erickson and Pastor Richard D. Shaw, both with the Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, looking at their campaign to draw attention to concerns about Christian nationalism. It's called We All Belong. Back to your calls now. Jane is with us in Oconomowoc. Jane, hi.
Hi. thanks for taking my call. One thing that I would like to point out, my faith tells me that Jesus was radical. He was radically inclusive, radically supportive, radically loving of everyone, including those who did not love him. And so I, as a Christian, must live out my faith with that radical idea that everyone belongs and everyone deserves a voice.
Jan, thanks for the call. Pastor Shaw.
Yes, I could not agree with her more. Oftentimes we want to present Christ in a way that, and I'll just say dominant society or Christianity has shaped this image of having to be a certain way in order to be Christian. But the thing about it is Jesus commanded us to love our neighbors, commanded us to love our neighbors, and his work while he existed here definitely spoke against even the powers that existed at that time. And so as a faith community today, and I'm drawing from my Christian belief, is that we have to do the same. We have to do the same. And so I do agree with the call.
And Bishop Erickson, your reaction?
I would just say, amen. We are called to be radically inclusive, and that means listening to and engaging with folks from all different perspectives. I mean, even within the Christian faith, there is a strong diversity of opinions and views. We don't always agree on everything, even within our own house. So we need to engage in deep, deep listening and conversation, starting from a premise that everyone belongs and everyone's voice matters.
Pastor Shaw, do you see room for a group like yours to talk to leaders who might put themselves in this Christian nationalist camp, or whether they call it by that name or not? Do you see opportunity for a productive dialogue?
I would hope. And that's going to be the key, productive dialogue and sitting down and being willing to hear one another. Although I'm somewhat skeptical, but I do believe that it is possible. And that's what we have to do. We have to try to get people to come to the table and talk about it. Because again, it goes back to my first statement. I do think that there are some people who subscribe to it without all of the details and not realizing what they have involved themselves into, because they want to be faithful. And I put that in quotations to what they believe.
I want to talk about some recent unfortunate trends in Wisconsin. We see year after year, unfortunately, yet another report released finding that anti-Semitic incidents in particular on the rise in Wisconsin for the seventh consecutive year. Bishop Erickson, I know there are Jewish leaders prominent in your movement as well. What do you talk to your congregation about specifically when it comes to anti-Semitic incidents?
Well, certainly we need to stand with our Jewish siblings and stand against anti-Semitism and hatred of all forms. There are just recently some flyers that were handed out in the community of Sussex, and we need to find ways to stand with our folks and recognize that we are all children of the same loving God, and we cannot be driven by fear and hatred and a misunderstanding of difference. We need to embrace difference, and even if we don't understand one another, we can stand together and work together.
And in just our last minute or so, Pastor Shaw, on a practical level, what is in the coming year for this campaign?
We just want to make sure that we get as many congregations involved as possible. The idea is that if we can bring this awareness, and then that will begin the process of addressing it. Just keeping focus on the idea of building a beloved community. And it's the community that Dr. Martin Luther King spoke about, not one that is exclusive, but one that is inclusive, diverse, and it welcomes and embodies all people.
Pastor Shaw, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Bishop Erickson, thanks for being with us. Thank you. We've been talking to Pastor Richard Shaw, president of Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, known as MICA, and pastor at St. Matthew Christian Methodist Episcopal Church, and Bishop Paul Erickson, bishop of the Greater Milwaukee Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Been talking about their interfaith work, speaking out against white Christian nationalism, which they see as a major political issue ahead of the 2024 presidential election. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, a lot of refugees from Afghanistan lived at a military base here in Wisconsin for a while, and then some of them stayed here in the state. Join Kate and her guests for an update on resettlement efforts, what life is actually like for Afghan refugees here in Wisconsin. And as always, you could join in with your questions. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Here's a new world record that's going to be hard to climb past, a record for climbing the 14 tallest mountains in the world in the shortest amount of time. As reported by Smithsonian Magazine, Kristin Harila from Norway and Sherpa mountaineer Tenjin climbed all 14 mountains in a span of 3 months and 1 day. There's some arguments in the mountaineering world about measuring these kind of records, including whether or not you use supplemental oxygen or had a helicopter drop supplies, but however you slice it, it's a pretty impressive achievement. And I can relate. You may not know this, but I once made a solo, unassisted ascent of the highest point in Wisconsin. I don't like to brag, but I'm one of the rare elite of thousands and thousands of people who have made it to the top of Tim's Hill and the Observation Tower. A dizzying third of a mile above sea level, it was a grueling few minutes of mild exertion. In the end, I was triumphant. So congratulations to my fellow mountaineers on their achievement. Oh, the heights will hit. On with the show. This is Central Time.
You're listening to The Ideas Network from Wisconsin Public Radio.